To call the Board of Supervisor meeting April 23rd, 2013. The time is 9:02 a.m. We're first going to start out with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would like to ask veteran Doug Miller, who's also on the Veterans Commission, to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And please stand, I'm sorry, let's please stand for a moment of silence for Behavioral Health and Recovery Services employee Ruben Zuniga. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Miller. Okay, now we're going to go to public comment, and this is an opportunity for anyone to speak on any item that's not on today's listed agenda. I have two speaker cards. The first one is Vernon Lee Price.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, gentlemen of the council, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Executive Officer, ladies and gentlemen, Modesto. My name is Vernon Price. I'm a homeless advocate here in Modesto. I do have a concern with some CDBGs that was granted last session. If I may leave something for Madam Clerk to make a copy of, this is a request to the Salvation Army during an event that was a public forum for our city. They were denied by Captain Smith, blatant disregard by their supervisor for the homeless to attend such event for quality of life and public safety, that they do receive community dollars. And I went to their board of directors meeting, and they said that the public, it was a closed session, which I do understand being a religious event, but if you receive public dollars under the bylaws and the laws of 501c3s, have to require a public comment section. I was told by their commander that if I attended such event that I would be arrested. This is a blatant humiliation toward homeless people trying to improve the quality of their life, trying to improve the quality of their community, and change the plight of homelessness. I do have a copy, I believe, at the Madam Executive Officer, Searching Out Solutions, Creative Alternatives for Criminalization of Homelessness, in hopes to set a meeting with her office, with the DA's office. I don't know if the DA's office would be prosecuting such cases. There's 15 tickets with court dates on 6/5/13, unlawful camping in public places. What makes these unlawful tickets is when there's not a shelter open and available, that it is unconstitutional. So says Jones versus the City of Los Angeles, Santa Ana versus Toby in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I do have and will transfer or PDF to the Chief Executive Officer of the county, and in hopes to reach a resolution on this matter. Thank you so much for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Next up, Astrid Zuniga.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to come up today and thank each and every one of you for signing the resolution and proclamation in support of April being Autism Awareness Month. It is something that is very near and dear to my heart and several individuals in our community, and we really need to stand behind those families and give them our support in helping to educate the communities and everyone abroad of the issues that these individuals go through. Across the country right now, the rate is 1 in 88 children, one in 53 boys. There's been a new survey that has come out. It is more like one in 50 children that are affected by this spectrum disorder. It has become more of a national epidemic, and I thank you all from the bottom of my heart for signing this proclamation, and I look forward to working with you guys in the future to do more things with Autism Speaks in the April Awareness Month for Autism and lighting up the city blue. Thank you.
Appreciate, I know you've been a huge advocate for it, and I appreciate you. We need, I told you, 1,000 people like you in the community working on issues like this, so thank you. All right, any other person wishing to speak during public comment? Okay, if not, we're going to move on. I'm going to do the consent agenda. We are pulling item B3 from today's agenda, pulling it completely, and then we're going to pull B4 for discussion. Anything else? Anyone else want to pull an item? If not, I will accept the motion on the consent agenda, which are the items marked with an asterisk, A1 through 3, B1 and 2, and 5 through 8, C1 through 4, and D1.
Motion.
Except for B3, yes.
A motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're going to talk about B4, and I think Supervisor Withrow wanted to talk on it.
Yeah, if I could, I know Tim is here today from the Public Defender's Office. I'm just curious as to why, I understand the need for the fund, but I'm just curious as far as where it's coming from and why we need to take it from our contingencies fund, from the general fund, and not from possibly the CCP budget that we've set up for that. And so, if I could, no, come on up, Tim, that's okay. Yeah, and I understand, to some extent, and I think even recently, yourself and the DA have requested more money from the CCP budget coming up for the coming year. Is that correct?
For next
fiscal year. Next fiscal year, yeah. And so, so I know we continue to. I just think that there's a nexus between your need for these funds and where they should be coming from. You know, we're supposed to be receiving this AB 109 money and using it for, you know, we've been thrown this on our plate here to deal with. And we continue to say that we don't have, it's too early to tell as far as the data to decide if that's why, you know, you need this increase in funds. Is that your increase in your caseloads, is it because of the transfer of, these people down into our county now and us having to deal with them? But from my standpoint, I mean, it might be not a direct, we might not have a smoking gun here where we can say this person shot this person and it was one of our AB 109 people that were sent down here. But I think there's an indirect effect that's going on here. I think it's kind of the beginning of what we feared was going to happen here with the AB 109. You know, we talk about these unfunded mandates, and right now they're giving us money for this, but I fear that the day is coming that the money will dry up. And I think this is just the beginning, and this is an example of us starting to use general fund money to, as a result of what's going on with AB 109. We're starting to take money out that we could be using for something else, but now we're having to use it for this. And I think it should be coming from the money that's allocated for us to take care of these folks that they're sending down here, and we're not. And this is the start. I think this is just the beginning of us, you know, more and more going to hit our general fund as a result of AB 109. And I think just the fact that you guys are already asking for money for the next fiscal year's budget, you know, to increase your budget from the funds that were given to deal with these folks for AB 109. I mean, that's just an indication in itself. So why is this $500,000 going to have to come out of general fund? So go for it, Tim.
I'll try to address it. I certainly think your concerns are realistic. I just don't think that there's any real evidence that I could offer to the board that would support a claim that these costs, because most of these costs, I think all these costs, are really sort of lagging costs, if that makes sense to you. The way this works is somebody commits a crime. Generally, if it's not a, whatever the case is, if it's a multi-defendant case, the case begins with the appointment, at least from the defense point of view, of the appointment of counsel. So the public defender might be appointed to one guy. The conflict firms might be appointed to a number two, a number three. Number four would be appointed a private attorney who is being paid by the county from the Indigent Defense Fund to provide those services. They won't submit a bill to the Indigent Defense Fund generally until the case is not necessarily completed, but until something significant has happened in the case. Some of the practitioners don't submit their bills until almost a year has gone by. It depends on sort of the individual's practice, you know, whether he likes to bill monthly, whether they want to bill every 6 months, whether they want to bill us at the end of the case, something like that. But it's pretty rare for them to bill a significant amount of money until at least 6 months has gone by. So for me to stand up and say, first I got to say that most of these costs were costs that were earned by the private practitioners over the last year, year and a half even. So it's these are not things that have just arisen in the last 30 days or anything like that. They come to my attention or they come to the, you know, the auditor's attention later or now, but the actual work was done 6 months to a year ago.
I'm sorry, Tim, but aren't we 2 years into the realignment at this point? And
The way the realignment worked is, and if you were to say, what are the increased costs that this community is bearing because of realignment? All right, immediately you bore some costs because you have to house people who previously were housed in state prison but now are housed in county jail. But from an increased crime point of view, you wouldn't expect to see a direct increase in crime connected to the realignment until you get somebody who is not incarcerated, who would have been incarcerated in state prison, but now has been sentenced to a county jail time, but can't be incarcerated because we're too crowded. That individual then gets kicked out to the street earlier than they would have been kicked out previously, and then they commit a crime. Okay, so if there's a significant number of those guys, and that's the cause of the increase that we see in the felony crime, again, you wouldn't see it in the first 6 months because we didn't have people that were being sentenced to county jail, at least not many of them that were being sentenced to county jail under this realignment, who were getting kicked out because of overcrowding. The overcrowding was a problem that it didn't develop gradually. It developed fairly quickly, but it didn't develop in the first month. It developed over time after the inception of realignment. So that's another reason that the connection wouldn't be 18 months ago or almost 2 years ago. It would be, you know, something more recent. Finally, and I wrote this in an email, and I put a sentence or two, I think, in the agenda item, there isn't any information that I've seen, and I know that there are people who are looking for it. I mean, statewide, we've had a couple news conferences by legislators who were against realignment who have said, here's a specific example where somebody got out early and victimized somebody. We haven't had any in this community. Doesn't mean that hasn't happened. I'm just telling you that at this point, I don't have any good information, nor has the district attorney or the sheriff's department come forward and said, here are two people, five people, 20 people who got out early and immediately turned around and committed some offenses. Finally, it would have to probably be either a multi-defendant gang case, which often involves robbery or assault, or a murder case, for me to be confident that that is causing an increase in the Indigent Defense Fund. The reason being that the Indigent Defense Fund, again, going back to my first explanation, they handle sort of a third tier of cases, or even a fourth tier of cases, or fifth tier of cases in a sense. It goes to the Public Defender's Office, Conflicts 1, Conflicts 2, those are the names we give to the firms, that's not really what they're called, and then to the private bar. And this last year period that we're talking about, the cost that the Indigent Defense Fund has had to deal with, we only had 256 individuals. They had more cases than individuals. I think we had almost, not quite 500 billing events. So again, the attorneys can choose how they bill, so it's not consistent. But if I was appointed to represent somebody, I might bill 5 times over a year because I need the money, and I've been spending a great deal of time on this case, whereas my friend, who's also a private attorney, may bill only once during that time. So when I say almost 500 billing events, that doesn't mean that there were 500 cases. There were only 256 people who these attorneys represented during that year period. And whereas if you look at those bills, most of them, the substantial ones, the ones that are costing us money, are either murders, attempted murders, or these multi-defendant gang cases. Those tend to be the expensive ones. So somebody would have to show me that it's those cases that are caused by or the result of this realignment. In other words, you'd have to say to me, Tim, take a look at this gang case. Isn't it true that these guys would have been in prison but for realignment, got out early, and then they got together and they robbed this guy or they beat this guy up, and that's why we have this case. And it's not that I'm reluctant to come before you and say it's true. It's just I don't want to tell you it's true if it's not. And as far as I can tell, so far, there's no real evidence that that's the case. Okay. Now, going forward, it might be next year, it would be prudent to ask the CCP to give us some money, either to, at least to set it aside in case this problem develops at the end of next year. That's not, I'm not disagreeing with that. Yeah. But as far as these charges, I can't say to you they're the result of realignment.
Okay. And that's what I keep hearing, that we just can't, like you said, we don't have a smoking gun, but we do have the increase in crime that's going on here, and at some point we're going to have to tie the two together, and I don't know how long we're going to wait for that. And I understand your argument saying this money that you're asking for has to do with things maybe previous to this. How much are you asking for, though, in the current, for the coming fiscal year from realignment funds? I didn't know what that number was.
For this,
yeah.
First, haven't asked for a dime.
Oh, I thought you.
Your direction, I will, if you want me to.
For his safe public defender.
Okay.
For his public defender.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I just think it would be a
roughly $400,000 is what I'm asking for the
but
public
is it
defender.
Two positions.
For two positions and one secretary.
Right. I would just love to see more money come out of the, you know, because we have all kinds of programs and things we're doing through the CCP mm-hmm. with these realignment funds that we've been given. But I'd love to see more of it then go. And not come out of our general fund budget. I know our chairman last week was down south working on trying to, with the CSAC, trying to see where we stand as far as this formula, and I know Monica's been working with it too. And we're getting less and less, and here it comes. And I just, again, this is the beginning of the end as far as I'm concerned. We're starting to take money out of general funds, and I know you say it maybe has nothing to do with it, but I just don't buy that argument at this point. I just cannot, I mean, I just read the paper enough, and you know, it's, crime is up, and we continue to try to deny this, and I think it's politically correct to try to deny it, that this isn't as a result of realignment, but it is. I mean, this is, what's going on here is a direct result of it, and so anyway, I don't know what I can do about this or what any of us can do about it. I know you need the money in order to continue on with your cases, but geez, I sure don't want this to be a trend. I sure... And it might come to us inevitably as some of the other unfunded mandates. We might end up with, you know, paying for this thing like we have before. But I don't want to do it any earlier than we have to, because it just takes money away from other programs that we'd love to fund. And so I guess...
Tim, can you discuss, though, the revocations, what you did receive money for related to realignment?
There's actually two kinds of revocation. There's parole revocations, which starts July 1 of this year, but there are also PRC. But there's a way of looking at it. These guys are sentenced now on these cases to local prison. It's really county jail time, but we call it local prison. They're still receiving a felony sentence, which used to mean the distinction between a felony and misdemeanor were that you were receiving more than a year in jail, you were being locked up in state prison. Less than a year in jail, was if your exposure was less than a year, that was considered a misdemeanor. Under the new scheme, there are this whole middle class of crimes, which we call 1170H crimes, where you can be sentenced to a period of time in prison, but you don't go to state prison. You're sentenced to county jail to serve your prison sentence here in county jail. Part of that scheme is that you're also put out on post-release community supervision, which is the equivalent of what used to be or what would be parole. It's it's the probation department doing the supervising. So in a lot of ways, it's just like another burden for probation. You're being supervised by the probation officers. You might as well call it probation, but it's not called that. In any event, these guys now are subject to revocation if they violate their terms and conditions. The public defender and the district attorney in the funding stream were given a small amount of dedicated funds that was supposed to address the revocation of 1170H status, either because you were released from prison and you're on parole or post-release community supervision, you're directed to report to probation, or you're a new one of these people who was just sentenced yesterday to a period of county prison time and then going to be put on post-release community supervision. And as you know, I think from hearing from the sheriff, a lot of these guys are getting out early because of the crowding in the jail, and then they're on post-release community supervision, and then they don't do what they're supposed to. Maybe they don't report. Maybe they come up with a dirty test. Maybe generally not a new offense, because if it's a new offense, they'll just charge them with a new offense. And then they revoke that probation or that release. We got some money. The first year it was $106,000, I believe. Second, this current year it's $112,000. Next year it's supposed to go up to $124,000. And those funds are, it's debatable how much they're tied or required to be spent on this function, but those funds were earmarked for that purpose, for handling the revocation hearings that these guys are now confronted with or participating in.
And Tim, that's essentially offsetting your public defender costs, not your indigent defense related
costs. Absolutely. There's no money that went to the indigent defense for that purpose. We do the vast majority of those revocation hearings. Again, going back to the individuals that I mentioned, 256 were in the first 9 months of this fiscal year who were generating a cost that you see reflected here in the Indigent Defense Fund. These are new cases. These are big new cases. Most of them, again, are related to crimes of violence. They're either multiple defendant cases, which tend to be very costly, or murder cases or attempted murder cases. Not every one. There are a few exceptions in there, but not many.
So then we're just saying that we missed, because of this increase in activity, increase in cases for you, we've missed it, and we need $500,000 to...
It didn't
have anything to do with anything else.
I'm not
going to
argue about whether that's true or not.
Yeah.
I would tell you that I don't know. As I stand here and look at you, I don't know what the reason there's been an increase in cases is the explanation for that increase in cases. And I can't absolutely tie the increase in cases to these increased costs, because, again, with only 256 cases out of, if you look at the district attorney's report, they file more than 12,000, 13,000 cases a year. Now, not all of those are felonies. Probably more than half of those are misdemeanors. And the misdemeanors account for almost nothing in this cost. I think we had 3 misdemeanor cases in the 256 cases, the total bills on those misdemeanors weren't 10 grand total. So that wasn't the source of this problem. But I don't know why there's an increase in cases. This increase in cases seems to be statewide. As I have said at the TCP meetings, it may be related to the fact that we're spending some additional funds, not just the county, but all government agencies have seen some return of their budget and are spending more money on law enforcement or law enforcement-related expenses. But this is a political question in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm not standing here advocating that that's the explanation. I'm just saying that's possible too.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So we're going to do the sit down, and what are we going to do next year?
So let me share with you what we did over 3 years ago. In anticipation, when we started seeing our budget going down as a result of just overall spending plan, we went out, reached out to our contract attorneys, and I believe, Ms. Supervisor Withrow, you were on the board at that point, and we were able to negotiate multi-year agreements with our conflict firms of roughly a 10% reduction that continued over a 3-year period. And correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's
right. Also, CEO staff, along with public defender staff, sat down with the courts, I believe it was last year, and you guys were able to negotiate the appointed rates down, whether it was a felony for appointed counsel that came through the bar process. And I believe we used one example in here for both felony cases and adult and juvenile courts were reduced from $85 per hour to $80 per hour. So, and knowing that our Indigent Defense Fund at times goes through these cycles, Supervisor Withrow, we have taken some preemptive steps early on, but believe me, as staff, CEO staff, public defender staff, sheriff staff, probation staff, and DA staff, we're monitoring these costs. I know both our sheriff's department and probation, their goal is to have, they've been trying to coordinate the efforts relative to the data collection. And hopefully, as a result of this current year's AB 109 records and also offenses and returns, we will have some better statistics. But what I'm hearing, along with my peers in other counties, this is rampant throughout the state of California. And I don't want to brag about ourselves, but we probably have some of the greatest as far as mutual cooperation, but also data collection earlier on that I know in more than one instance to Stanislaus County and different realignment discussions at the state level and through CSAC. They've used Stanislaus as the example because it essentially is very difficult to track these folks. But I do want to bring up something else relative to a very recent multiple defendant case. I believe, and I don't believe it's concluded, it might be currently in sentencing, Tim, the four defendant. I was told recently that out of those four defendants, we roughly had out of those, I believe there was either four to six attorneys that were appointed. I believe only one of them was able to be handled through your department, and at least four of the others or three of the others were appointed counsel that essentially our Indigent Defense Fund essentially is paying for. That is currently in the court process now.
That sounds realistic to me, but just saying a four-defendant case, I don't know exactly which case you're talking about.
Okay.
Without going back and knowing the names of the people. We do have a number of those, but...
And then I believe there's a 7-1 that's coming in that has quite a few appointed counsel with our conflicts. So,
if you look at the paper, we've had several of these over the last several years. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's that. I don't know if that's a trend that's unique to Stanislaus County. I doubt it. But for whatever reason, we've had these murders, and you've seen them in the paper, where four or five, six guys get together, and they have all play some role. It's often gang or drug related, either the invasion of a drug house or their perception that this is a drug dealing house, so they get in there in a group and somebody gets killed. And then you've suddenly got 5, 4, 7, 9, I think in one case it started out, people charged with murder. And those are just expensive to handle. They just really are. I could explain it,
statistics
of it. I mean, it's almost comical sometimes to watch the court try to herd this group of four or five defense attorneys, a DA, and everybody's schedule is conflicted and...
Security.
And they try to set these things. Anyway, it gets very expensive. I'm not justifying it. I'm just telling you that.
Oh, that's okay. And just the bottom line, I mean, I appreciate all you're doing, Tim. I know you got a tough job, and I wouldn't want it for anything.
It's a good job.
But the bottom line is here, I just do not want to see us using general fund money that I think is tied to realignment. And we should be using the realignment funds. I think it's we're enabling the state, in essence, is what we're doing. We're starting to work towards using our general fund money to cover this burden that's been placed on us. And so I guess that's ultimately the bottom line, and I think that's what we're doing here. And I think we need to do everything we can possibly to identify or connect your increased costs with the realignment and get the money to come from the state to pay for that rather than come from our general fund. That's the bottom line.
I think you're absolutely right. I have no philosophical or any other objection to that. I think that's absolutely reasonable. It's just at this point I couldn't connect.
And Supervisor Withrow, I know the CCP committee will be coming before this board, I believe in June. They're currently going through their budget process, and so at that time would be a perfect opportunity so that they could provide you what statistics they currently have and what plans they have going forward in order to monitor this. And along with putting some of those CCP dollars to where we're seeing the exposure within the community, especially within the various county services when they're being directly impacted. conflicts would be a perfect example of that.
Okay, so Tim, thank you for doing this. And I guess I'm going to go ahead and personally vote for this, I guess, but I'm, as Jim DeMartini says, I'm going to hold my nose when I do this, because I think it's the beginning of something that we shouldn't be doing and getting into, and I just hope we're, you know, I wouldn't want to do this again. So,
yeah.
Anyway, thanks for what you've done.
Any other questions?
No, I think we're good. I do have a comment, but go ahead, Supervisor.
I just wanted to weigh in. Probation Department has a crime analyst who's looking at all this data that's coming in on the AB-109ers. And, you know, Tim is correct. There's no concrete evidence that what the charges we're seeing is related to AB-109. However, I agree with you that it just makes sense that it is related to AB-109. And I think the part that we haven't looked at, we haven't researched, we haven't collected the data on is when we get an AB-109 into our jail and we release somebody who's not an AB-109, if the increase in crime from that non-AB-109er that we released is not being calculated into the AB-109 equation.
Right. I agree with that.
And I don't even know how you would calculate it. It would be some serious, intense crime analyst that has to figure that out. But that's the part that I don't know that we can calculate into the equation.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I just think, though, the crime is going up, and it's just common sense. Forget all the calculations. It's just common sense. We've got more bad people here coming back into our community, and the crime is going up. And so we need to somehow, you know, not use our general fund money to cover this when there's other money out there. So anyway.
But our CEO is correct. We are so much further than other counties, one, in the cooperation that we have with the players in the CCP, but as far as data collection and starting to analyze this, other counties are just starting, and we are much further along.
And Supervisor O'Brien, to address part of your, I know you and I both were at that last two meetings ago when our district attorney spoke about a reoffense that was occurring with one of the individuals she was having to prosecute, and that potentially could be a perfect example of somebody who was never did all of their time, and I don't know for sure if that was an occurrence, but that might be a measurement that both from a defense and a prosecution, we might be able to measure it from that perspective, because as our DA said, the case file was just so deep, and she was already back in court with the same offender.
And I just think that we, you know, as a benchmark, sorry, we're going to beat this to death, I'm sorry, but, you know, as a benchmark, crime has been going down, and then all of a sudden crime is going up, and maybe it's just that simple that somehow we look as a benchmark, where were we before realignment, and where are we now, you know, and maybe that's not enough to tie it to, but that is basically what's going on. So, anyway, Tim, thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, I think we got it, but I appreciate this discussion. I really do. And I guess rather than wait till my board report, I'm just going to say about the AB-109 funding formula right now. I think it would be appropriate at the CSAC level. And I want everyone to understand this is more for information than anything else. When the original AB-109 funding formula came out, it was based on average daily population, how many people we had that were coming back under post-release supervision or were going to be sentenced into the county jail for the 3 years rather than the 1 year. And we tend to send a lot of people to prison here in Stanislaus County. We had. But that has more to do with our socioeconomic poverty levels, unemployment, some other things. So the formula was pretty good. That was a six-month formula. They changed the formula. They added a population component. And you ended up with some of the more affluent areas of the Bay Area, Alameda, Contra Costa, Marin, Santa Cruz came out okay, San Francisco came out okay. So you saw these big disparities in funding formula on a per-offender basis. And you have to remember the per-offender basis. I think we're just short of 11,000 per offender. And Sonoma tends to be in our population level. There are about 500,000 people similar to us. So I use them as the example. And they're getting about 21,000 per offender. And so the argument went, the formula was set for 2 years. We did not come out well on it, and there was $77 million worth of growth formula that's being allocated right now. There's a formula being allocated to what is the RAC committee, or it's a group of CEOs, and our CEO Nino has been participating, although she's not the voting member. Fresno's CEOs are voting member from the Valley, John Navarretti and Larry Spikes from Kings County. So the formula, instead of it trying to fix the inequity of the system, 64% of that $77 million was locked into the old formula. So we really got it again. So we wrote a letter to the governor. The Department of Finance actually has the final say on how the formula is split up, and they're taking up the formula going forward after next, after the end of this year, 13-14. So, you know, the arguments are for Stanislaus County is we're trying to, I think last week it was brought up, how we're trying to get programming to keep people from, or lower our recidivism rate. I mean, really, that's the goal. Getting people, they serve their time, they come out better citizens and with better skills, they have a better skill set, they're willing to acclimate back into society. And that is based on, in order to provide programming, it's strictly funding. And if we're at 11,000 or just short of 11,000 and Sonoma's at 21,000, who's going to have a higher recidivism rate just based on common sense, just what you're talking about, Supervisor Withrow? So, and because we were initially sending more people, and maybe we were too harsh on them. I mean, that, you can sit and argue that all day long, and it's the chicken and the egg argument. But if we are to provide those opportunities for these folks, and that's the goal of the state, that's the goal of our CCP, they've done a good job, then we actually need to be just the opposite. We need to be super funded because these people are coming back based on the average daily population. We know our numbers are higher per capita than Sonoma is, and I'm not picking on Sonoma. I'm just trying to make my point that we need to be at least at the same level, and there was an expectation, a reasonable expectation, that the growth funding, the $77 million, that the counties that were low below the mid-range were going to be brought up to help in this programming. And unfortunately, when they picked the 64% to lock it in the same, we had no chance. So we're going to take our chances with the Department of Finance. I can tell you that all eight Valley counties came out the same. And it's pretty typical of the state of California. And CSAC recognizes, the CSAC staff, which is our state organization, recognizes the inequity in the system, but yet it's a one-man, one-vote. There's 58 counties, and if you were receiving $20,000 or $30,000 per offender, you know, why would you vote to give? It's much like the property tax inequity. Why are you going to give something up for Stanislaus? So we had a great discussion. I want everyone to be aware, if that was the case, if we were just at average, we would have another $3 million, more or less, for Stanislaus County. And what could the sheriff do with $1 million? What could the DA and the public defender and probation do with $1 million? You know, we could provide better programming. You could provide a better defense, probably. And not that you're not providing a good defense, but it is, with the caseload and the caseload growth that's expected out of this, I don't believe $106,000 is going to cover that. And I agree with my fellows up here. It is when the numbers come out in the end, I think we'll be able to tie it back, whether it's the way you talked about, Supervisor O'Brien, the people we release that will become 109 folks sooner or later if we don't have the programming available. So that was the discussion. Did I get anywhere? No, but I sure felt good. I felt really good. So, again, we're collectively, as a board, I want you to know that we're working on this. Our CEO is working hard on it. Jill Silva, the probation chief, Adam Christensen, our sheriff, with their associations, you know, we're making people aware. It is a simple fairness issue. If we're all going to be expected to do the same thing, we should expect the same funding per offender, and not based on how affluent your community is. Marin, with $129,000 per household, average income versus 64,000 here. We can't expect the crime levels going to be the same in Marin that it is here in Stanislaus County. That's not a reasonable expectation. So with that, I'm done speaking. Any other comments? Hope that was understandable. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and take a motion.
Motion to approve.
Okay. I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, thanks, motion carries 5-0. Thank you very much, Mr. Bazaar. Okay, we're moving on. It's past 9:05, way past 9:05. So we're going to move on to our scheduled matter. The first one, scheduled matter A, approve and introduce and waive the first reading of the ordinance to establish new and amended existing fees for the Department of Environmental Resources.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Chairman, I would like to abstain from item A.
Okay.
Item A has health department fee permit dollars, and although there's no change to it this year, which would not impact me, I do have quite a few health department permits, and I would hate for anybody to say that the board took an action of no change that benefited me, so I'm going to step down from this item and ask that hopefully we can vote on item A differently today as well as next week when it comes back for final approval.
Yes, we will. We'll take up A all by itself. Okay, let the record show. Supervisor O'Brien's left the dice.
Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, board members, CEO Nino, County Council Doring, Jamie Eggers, Director of Environmental Resources and Parks and Recreation. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to Mary Vorobaugh, the new Assistant Director for the Department.
Congratulations.
And let's go ahead and get started. The item before you today, first of all, is the proposed new and amended fees for environmental resources. We have the new fees, which pertain to just one division in the department, the Environmental Health Division, and then we have amended fees in our hazardous materials, milk and dairy, and landfill divisions. The new fees are to cover the cost of two new state-mandated programs, first the Cottage Food Operations and the Safe Body Art Act. The Cottage Food legislation became effective January 1st, and the Safe Body Art Act legislation became effective last July 1st. So these fees are to cover the cost of implementing these new programs. The modifications to our existing fees are due to state-mandated surcharge and also one consumer price index change. Starting with the cottage, or we refer to it more commonly as the homemade food operations, the new fees will cover the cost of facility annual registration for both Class A and Class B. Class B involves direct and indirect sales, whereas Class A is just direct sales only to the customer. We have a fee proposed for a menu modification, as well as any facility or operation found to be operating without a permit. And that we're proposing to be double the permit fee in those cases. And that's consistent with how we handle this in other areas of our fee schedule. Moving on to the Safe Body Art Act. For a new facility, we're recommending a $285 fee. Same fee for a facility with a single body artist operating, and that includes the fee for one registration. Artists registering individually are proposed at $95 and half that amount for an artist application revision. For a replacement artist card, a fee of $25 is proposed. We also, from time to time, have temporary events for body art, and in those instances, we're proposing a $380 fee. And at those events, the temporary registration fee would be $47.50. Believe it or not, we also, from time to time, are approached for mobile facility permit, and we're proposing $285 fee there, and then a plan check fee of a two-hour minimum weighted labor rate. For a facility plan check fee, we're proposing a four-hour minimum weighted labor rate and a plan check remodel at $190. For those facilities who do the mechanical, for the most part, ear piercing only, we're proposing a notification fee of $45. And for body art facilities or artists found to be operating without a permit, we're proposing a $600 fee, which again is consistent with the same type of category elsewhere in our fee structure, our existing fee structure. And lastly, the for owners who have a permit for their facility but have artists operating at their facility without a permit, we're proposing a fee of $95 per artist. And then moving on to other changes in our fee structure, we have on the left-hand side of the screen showing you the current fees and the proposed fees. And these are the first two are due to changes in the state-mandated pass-through costs. First, for our hazardous materials COOPA program, which is the Certified Unified Program Agency, The fee was $49 until recently. It's been lowered to $35, so we want to reflect that change in our fee structure. In the milk and dairy program, recently the state imposed a 15% surcharge on top of our local fees, so we want to incorporate that into our fee structure as well. And lastly, the waste-to-energy facility produces ash as a residue, and when the contract with Covanta was renegotiated, effective last July 1st, that included a provision to adjust that tipping fee for the ash according to a particular consumer price index each year. And the difference in that was less than 1%, but it raises it 23 cents per ton. And lastly, we're proposing to delete one fee, which pertained to public swimming pools and spas, and that was due to a $6 surcharge, which sunsetted recently, so we want to drop that from our fee schedule. We conducted stakeholder meetings on March the 5th, and in that process, we had received one comment from the body art industry, and that was specific to temporary event artist registration. And so we incorporated that change. We lowered that fee from a 1 hour fee to a half an hour fee. And we thought that was appropriate because of the economies of scale in those instances. Public notices were printed in the Modesto Bee on both April 12th and April 18th. And our proposed fees have been posted on our website since March the 5th. So the staff recommendation today is to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish new and amend existing fees for the Department of Environmental Resources. And if approved, the fees will become effective June 7th, with the exception of the ash tipping fee, which would become effective July 1st. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of staff? Simple. Okay, then I'm going to open up the public hearing. Anyone like to speak on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. I think, although it doesn't say it, I think we're supposed to adopt the fee structure, right?
You actually adopt the ordinance next week, but today would be the day that you would actually approve it.
Okay.
And I just had one of staff on this milk and dairy surcharge. You know, the dairies have been hit with all kinds of costs for nitrogen, groundwater monitoring, and then I see another one now. It's a state mandated. What is this new one that they're going to have to pay now?
It's actually an item we brought to you a few months ago because they made the change effective immediately. We couldn't wait until this opportunity, or it would have essentially come out of the department's funds. But they simply tacked on a 15% charge on top of our local fees to fund the activities that they provide for us, which include some training activities and some oversight activities of our role.
So what is it the dairies get out of this? Nothing, isn't it?
Well,
there's a wonder why a lot of the dairies are moving out and going to New Mexico and Texas.
Yes.
Just every year it's just something else.
We work to try to oppose the fee without success.
Okay. I don't like it, but I'll support it. I mean, we don't really have any choice.
Yes. Any other questions? Yeah. If not, I'll bring it back for a motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve.
We have a motion. We have a second.
I'll second.
Supervisor Montes, second. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Carries 4-0. Supervisor DeMartini holding his nose.
I said aye on there, but I wasn't about to make that motion or second.
We know this. Okay, now we're moving on to schedule matter B. Can we do it? We're going to take them separate from here on out, or we do it as one? Okay, we're separate action item, or I'm sorry, schedule matter B, approval to introduce and waive the first reading of the ordinance to establish new and amended fees the Department of Parks and Recreation.
Thank you. Just waiting for it to come on the screen. There we go. Okay. Moving on to Parks and Recreation. In our park system, we have four regional parks, two off-highway vehicle parks, that's including Frank Range and the Grange, and Modesto and Woodward Reservoirs. Annually, our revenue is approximately $2.3 million, which pays for the operations and maintenance of these facilities. In addition, the OHV parks also receive some state off-highway vehicle grants, which offset our operations and maintenance costs and pay for special projects. Each year, in preparation for proposed budget, the department evaluates the cost of services provided and the associated fees. The evaluation most recently completed for the coming year indicates the need to continue to increase revenue in order to maintain a balanced budget as costs continue to rise. A survey of similar facility fees, however, found that our entrance fees are comparable to other parks, which is why we're not recommending increasing our standard entrance fees at this time. A limited number of fees were raised last year. Examples include our annual pass fees in various categories. Other fee changes were to add new categories, such as a mooring and dry storage fee, and merging of some categories for consistency and consolidation. In 2012, the categories for disabled persons and 100% permanently disabled veterans, prisoners of wars, and seniors were combined into one because they were similar and charged the same fee. But this raised some concerns, and separate veterans fee categories are again being included this year in our proposal, the details of which are coming up in a few slides. Clarifying language has also been added to designated group campsite fees and mooring fees to clarify that in the case of designated group campsite fees, other camping fees also apply. And in the case of the mooring fee, if 3 months or more are purchased, that would include one annual pass. Additional clarifications include calling out the holidays where a premium is being charged, so we're specifically identifying those as Memorial Day, Independence Day, and Labor Day. And each of these clarifications result in no changes to the existing fees. The new and discount fees we're proposing include the following. Free entrance on Veterans Day and May 1st each year, and that's in honor of Memorial Day. And this will be for all veterans, both former and active duty. We're also proposing to include an additional discounted veterans fee for the period of November 1st through November 14th each year. And again, this is in honor of Veterans Day. And that would be at a cost of $5 per day or per night, which is a 75% discount. Going on with our new fees, we're also including to expand our historical day use fee to the go-kart area at Woodward Reservoir, where we have not historically charged a fee. The standard day use fee of $10 per vehicle is what we're proposing to collect. Another new fee category that we're recommending is a pool rental fee, and this would be for our Regional Water Safety Training Center out in Empire, at a rate of $60 per hour, unheated, for a two-hour minimum, plus an additional $60 per day for the number of days needed to bring the pool to a heated temperature if requested. And consistent with that, we're also recommending a $250 refundable pool rental deposit. And the last new fee that we're recommending is an event entrance fee at our OHV parks. And this would be an additional $5 fee assessed at either Frank Range or LaGrange for special events, but only when gate fees are collected. And this is benchmarked with the $5 premium that we charge during the fireworks event at Woodward. And just as a note, one of the things that we're working very hard on in our
Parks Department is expanding what we call special events. And we're anticipating the opportunity to greatly increase our revenue in the coming year by attracting additional special events, such as the Symbiosis event that was brought to the board last week and you approved. We held our stakeholder meeting on March the 6th, and one new fee was added to what we're proposing based on a comment that we received, and that was to point out that there's an additional cost to heat the pool in Empire, so we did add that as another category. Other comments we received were from attendees present to ensure that fishing and duck hunting fees were not being raised, which we were not proposing to raise those. But they also asked that we consider the possibility of a duck blind storage fee at the reservoirs, which the department will review in the coming year. I also wanted to point out that one comment was received during the public comment period on March the 26th. And it was a question about whether or not the exclusive use category could be used to allow mobile food concessions at Woodward Reservoir. With your support, we would like to expand our exclusive use fees to include licensing concessions, and we would propose to implement a pilot program immediately following today's hearing, which would begin next month. And we would begin licensing concession vendors to operate there, and if successful, to potentially expand that to the other regional parks. Specifically, what we're proposing is to include two full-service type mobile food vehicles and two ice cream snow cone type vendors. We've developed some guidelines for this pilot program internally, and that includes notifying potential vendors of this opportunity via USPS mail, and we have those notices ready to go out this afternoon if you approve of this today. Vendors would be selected on the basis of a complete application, paying the required fees, obtaining all the necessary permits and insurance coverage. The department would have the ability to limit the number of days, the number of weekends, and the number of holidays per vendor in order to allow for multiple vendors to have the opportunity. We've identified two sites at Woodward Reservoir for locating the vendors. One is at the old concession area and one is at Mountain View Point. And on the next slide we have, it's a little small, but tried to point those areas out. Lastly, the Parks and Recreation Commission moved to support the proposed fees at their meeting on March the 14th. Public notices were printed in the Modesto Bee on April 12th and 18th, and the proposed fees are also posted on the department's website. So staff recommendation is to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish new and amend existing fees for the Department of Parks and Recreation. And if approved, the fees would be effective June the 7th. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of staff?
I noticed in for the veterans, you have free Veterans Day, but also May 1st, in honor of Memorial Day, why didn't you just put that on Memorial Day rather than a month before it?
That's a very good question. But as you can probably imagine, that's the kickoff of our very, very busy season, and we honestly didn't think that we could handle the additional volume. So we tried to pick a fixed day that it could be each year, and so we chose May 1st.
Okay, I wondered that because it didn't make any sense. Still doesn't.
Okay, questions? Staff? If not, I will open up the public hearing for any comment. Just come forward, state your name.
My name is Richard Edgecombe. I'm a resident of Stanislaus County. I'm a member of the Stanislaus County Veterans Advisor Committee. We strongly support the Department of Park and Recreation's proposal ordinance to establish a new amended existing fees for the Board of Supervisors. The Commission urges the Board to support the items, especially the creation of the separate fees category and establish a new fees for discounts for veterans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edgecombe.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Any other comments?
Morning, Board.
Morning.
I just want to thank you guys for...
Could you just state your name for the record?
Sorry, Chris Cosner. Thank you for working with me on the exclusive use idea. There's a little hang-up I see, though. The exclusive use fee is $90 a day, and the reservation fee is $10 a day. If you'll bear with me with some numbers here. I did a really extensive market study in terms of predicting what potential revenue could be at the permanent facility. And I talked to an expert running 65 marinas all over the country. He said, your golden ratio is $2 per day per campsite. I did all the math backwards, and it comes out to roughly $100,000 a year gross revenue potential in those 5 months of busy season, and you're closed the rest of the year. Well, beer is half that. When you're talking about a mobile facility, you can't get a liquor license. So 150 days in a five-month season, that comes out to $333 potential revenue per day. With an exclusive use fee of $100 per day, that's 30% of gross, and that's pretty rough. By my calculations, after the day is done, I'll have $94 to do all of my overhead, which now includes gas, because I'm moving around, also insurance, and then whatever I pay myself. That's rough. Still almost be willing to do it just to get my foot in the door and hopefully come back next year with a bigger, more permanent plan. Then you look at the four permits issued. Now, let's say you're out there every day. One permit is $3,000 a month. You know, that's a pretty expensive rent. Four permits, $3,000, 5 months, $60,000 in revenue to the park from issuing those four permits, right? But you'll never sell those four permits because, like I said, there's only $50,000 in revenue potential total without beer and wine. So I really appreciate wanting to move forward with the mobile concessions. However, I don't know how economically feasible it'll be as it currently stands. If you guys would be willing to waive it on the experimental basis so that we come back a year from now and say, okay, now we've got some real numbers establishing the kind of revenue potential at the lake. Now we can determine how much a concessionaire can actually afford to build a permanent facility, et cetera. That'd be cool. But basically right now, it's looking real rough.
You know, if I could real quick, I'm going to put my little accountant's hat on here and just tell you, in the food service industry, the normal kind of rule of thumb is your prime cost, we call it your prime cost, which is your labor and your cost of your products, whatever it is you're selling, food and beverage. It can't be any more than 69%, so it's usually somewhere around there, somewhere in the 60-69%. So I can see how this doesn't work mathematically for you. If and then you throw your rent in there, there's not much way that's going to work. I don't know that we can waive fees, but there should be some way that we can. I can just tell you, it's not going to work at that. You're not going to make any money, and so. So I don't know what we do with that. I just want to throw that out there for everybody so they know that's the way it works in the food industry, and he's right. He won't make any money doing this. So I would not invest in his venture.
I think when this came up, you know, we talked about mobile foods vendors a couple years ago. It went nowhere, and it came up last minute, and this is a way to get it into the fee structure that we already have in place. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be willing to try it for this summer, knowing that we're probably not going to see a mobile food vendor every day of the summer, but you might see it on some of the busier times, the busier expected weeks of people out there. And we purposely put in here that, you know, all mobile food vendors have an opportunity to get in here. So it's not designed for one person. Mm. I just want to make sure that's clear.
Got it.
But it's meant to see what kind of volume someone could see off of this that could then, again, move into a future permanent vendor. The better off we make that reservoir, the more popular it's going to be, the more people are going to want to come, and the more use it's going to get. And right now, not having food and beverage out there is a huge disadvantage to that lake. And so this is just meant as a, hey, let's try this, see what happens. And as it moves into hopefully a permanent store, hopefully a permanent jet ski rental type operation is what the long-term goal and vision is.
Yeah, and like I said, me personally, I would be willing to take a little loss to get my foot in the door on that future hope, because that's the big dream, you know, for me personally. But it's still rough and risky, so.
I still want to go over this Veterans Day, erect on May 1st, or Memorial Day. Why don't we go over this again, and can you tell me again why you can't do this on Memorial Day?
Because it's such a busy, busy kickoff weekend for us.
So don't the veterans just have to show a card to get in? I mean, it's much paperwork is it involved into?
They do have to show both a photo ID and a veteran's identification, correct.
And you think that's too much time to...
It does take more time, but it's also when we're collecting some of our peak revenue for the season.
You know, this if this passes today, I mean, it doesn't take effect until June 7th, which is past Memorial Day, so you wouldn't have to deal with it for over another year. Maybe by then you can come figure out how to do that. I don't know, it just seems odd to me. I mean, if you give something to somebody in reference to Memorial Day and you don't even do it on Memorial Day, it just seems out of place.
Jamie, do you have some numbers that you could bring back as part of once the board considers this as far as what the volume is on the 31st? Because Supervisor DeMartini, are you proposing that it be on May 31st?
Yeah, I think if you're going to...
Or whatever the Monday holiday.
Whatever Memorial Day is,
so
that's what it should be. And this doesn't even take effect until after Memorial Day, so we're talking about 2014 before we'd have to deal with it.
Because when you talk about Memorial Day, I always account that as being the Monday in which the holiday lands on. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's.
So would you be able to share with this board what... the entrance fees are for that particular day?
Sure, we keep...
Not necessarily the weekend, because aren't you proposing it for Memorial Day? Because I thought May 1st, so it's one particular day.
Sure, we should be able to come up with both counts and revenue.
Okay. Would that be helpful? So you know as far as just the pure staff, you know, from one day versus a peak holiday?
Well, that'd be good to know, but, you know, it's... I still disagree that letting somebody in is going to be a burden when they just have to show up their identification card and you pass them through. And I just don't see.
I think the bigger issue, Jim, is probably the loss of revenue. Is that what you're talking about? And that's
correct.
The numbers that we need to know. Yeah.
Correct.
Well, it's the loss of revenue, but we're also giving, you know, benefit to somebody who's done something for
them. Oh, no, I agree with you 100%. I agree with you, but I think that's what...
Right.
That's why it's not on that day, I think.
You know, we've got four different items here. Where it is amending fees and coming up with new fees. And every time I think that we can't come up with any more new fees, we come up with new fees or expand the ones we got. It just seemed like it's just endless. And there it's... You have a benefit that you're agreeing to give the veterans on Memorial Day, but you're doing it a month ahead of, yeah, I mean, it's like doing nothing, really. How are they even going to know?
Well, we're starting an advertising campaign for one, but we've also been in contact with the veterans organization locally, and they're sharing that information out. There used to be a free component in the rate structure, but that went away back in 2011, and we were asked to revisit that. So what we came up with is what we presented to you in a way to address the concern and reintroduce the free component without negatively impacting revenues. In fact, we're hoping to that this will be a new customer base for our facilities. So just for clarification, when would you want me to share back the information that you requested?
So, and this is a question for Mr. Doering, in regards to if Jamie were to bring that piece of this proposal back to the board on the day of the adoption, could we put something in regards to the staff recommendation to give this board the flexibility to make that decision for that particular fee as a result of her sharing that information for both a revenue and also a number of entrance fees?
If there's an amendment made at the next meeting, it would have to then be brought back to another meeting for final adoption.
Okay.
You know, why can't we just, for what it's worth, I agree with Jim, and I just think that let's do it on the actual day, and when there will be a loss of revenue, I realize that, but I'm okay with that, for what that's worth.
Okay, but now let me put this to the board. If we adopted the fee structure as is, it doesn't take effect, and then we bring it back next week for revisions, in two weeks, because else we're going to have to, we either pull it now, right? I mean, the way I see it, we either pull it now, we go through this process again starting in 2 weeks with amended fee structure.
Well, except that if you pull it all the way off now, then you also have a notice period for the public hearing and such, which probably adds at least a week.
And some of these fees, if we only have a problem with potentially two of them, if we adopt it, then we make the revisions, we start that process all over again on those revisions, because the adoption, the implementation, we'll have enough time before implementation, right?
So let's talk about...
These are not adopted till July 1, right? Start of the new calendar year.
June 7th for these.
June 7th.
We take action today.
Excuse me?
Yes.
I don't know that it makes sense to restart the process, given that we're in a public comment period. I mean, like, not public comment, but, you know, public hearing. I mean, the point of the public hearing is to talk about it, make changes as necessary, and then implement. So
I would agree with you normally, but I don't negotiate from the dais. I'm not a quick enough thinker. So we need the numbers to see what the revenue loss is in reality, and we're going to need to talk to people, because the fee structure, the way it's set up for the mobile vendors on the three holiday weekends, right, we could probably double or triple the fee, and no one would balk at it. It's the Tuesday through Thursday that you're going to lose money. So, you know, there's a component there that we need to look at what's fair, and there probably will be four people that want to show up on those three weekends as a mobile vendor, but the rest of the time they won't. And so that's got to be weighed in the whole logical process. If we're going to lower the fees, it probably isn't logical for us to do it on those three weekends.
Or any weekend over the summer.
Or the weekend. And I don't spend much time out at Woodward Reservoir.
If I could just clarify, what I was focused on was trying to accommodate the request of Supervisor DeMartini and Supervisor Withrow.
Right.
Since these fees don't go into effect until June 7th, that benefit is not even going to play forward in this current year's memorial. So what I'm proposing, so it doesn't hold these other fees up, just to pull that one out and bring that one back, if that would be something this board would consider.
We have a whole year before it would take effect for Memorial Day. So why not just adopt it either as it is or take Memorial Day off of it, let parks and veterans get back together to determine what the best solution is, find out what our capacity numbers have been on Memorial Day, find out what the revenue loss is, and we can't make it happen for this Memorial Day next month, any way we look at it. So let's get it in place, let Barks veterans come back with a better solution in time next year to make it effective for Memorial Day of 14.
And just a thought, Memorial Day typically has been on a Monday, and I recognize the board sensitivity. You know, I don't know if May 1st falls on a Saturday, but that might even be just something the veterans, as part of your discussions, Jamie, with the veterans, that might be to their benefit to get more folks to take advantage of it with it being a weekend day in May, you know what I mean, earlier, maybe even their preference. So just another thought.
Right. The difficulty was knowing, to pick a date, knowing that that's going to float,
you know,
year after year.
And there may be other ways to look at it. Maybe it's the Friday of Memorial Day weekend that kicks off Memorial Day weekend.
That's
maybe it's
right.
The week before. I'm sure there's a solution to it.
Yes.
But any way we cut it, we can't make it happen for Memorial Day of this year.
Correct.
So let's be prepared for next year.
So what's your proposal on the mobile vendors?
Mobile vendors would be in the same solution. I think if we modify any new fee category, we would have to notice it. The fee that she's talking about fits into an existing fee category. And if we do something new today, it's got to go through the public process.
So what we're really
all saying
is
she's allowing a policy decision that allows mobile food vendors to fall into an existing category.
Right, and whereas we would make it available 7 days a week, we fully recognize that the weekends and the few holidays in there is what's going to be the choice days.
And, Chris, I'm going to ask you, because I think Mr. Miller would like to speak again.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and members of the board. Doug Miller, Veterans Advisory Commissioner, Stanislaus County, in the at-large representative position. Mr. DeMartini, I just wanted to address what you had stated, and I want to thank you, by the way, the entire board, for the support that you've given the Veterans Advisory Commission over the last year. We hope that in the years following, we're going to be a strong advocate for all veterans' issues in this county. And specifically to your comments, thank you for noticing that. I had not noticed it as the chief negotiator from the committee. I'm not sure that, as a commission, we're not, regardless of whether or not you put this date on the specific holiday or prior, I don't know for this fiscal year that is a question. I think it should be revisited. It obviously is an issue. My purpose right now is that I don't want the veterans to be thought of as a portion of the community that is a financial liability, and I think that we're in danger of that because we're speaking right now about losing revenue at a specific date because of discount. You know, my feelings are very strong regarding the veterans community. I don't think that we're a financial liability in any way because we fight for freedom for the country. But beyond that, from a financial perspective, President Reagan proved over 30 years ago that when you lower taxes and fees, you actually increase your revenue. So if the staff is thinking that we're going to lose revenue, I think that with proper advertisement over time, you're actually going to increase your revenue. So I'd just like the board to take that into account. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
I'll go ahead and support this today as long as we take a look at this again. And I just want to remind everybody that if you're transferring May 1st to, say, May 31st, you're gaining revenue on May 1st, perhaps, and maybe just transferring the discount to a different day. But to me, it makes more sense. But I'll go ahead and support this as long as we take another look at it.
I guess I have a question. Can we, if we adopt these fees, and we were to lower the fees, and then the fees are lowered, we still have to go through the public hearing process? That's true, or?
It's a little more complicated. You have to look at each fee to determine whether or not the statutory basis for the fee gives you any particular provision. The way we typically do it is is to hold these hearings, which is public notice. But you can always we typically do it this time of year because we're preparing our budgets for the next year and we want to be able to more accurately predict what revenues might be. But we can always adjust those throughout the year as the need arises.
Now, my only thought was just changing the date, not changing anything to do with the fee structure. It's just moving the May 1st to whatever Memorial Day is.
I would think, in fairness, we take a look at the mobile vendor fees to see if the weekends, if we do something. I know I don't want to muddy the waters, but Supervisor Whistler seems to be a resident expert. He could be in charge of looking into that with Jamie. So, but I will support adopting the fees as recommended. So, do we have a motion to approve the new and amended fees?
So moved.
We have a motion.
So just to clarify, so then we're going to go back, though, and possibly come back in a minute. Okay.
So we can put it in place now and do a study and come up with the answers we need rather than sit here and try to resolve it, which is not going to work.
Yeah. Motion. Do I have a second to motion?
A second. Huh?
Okay.
I just wanted to say appreciate the study thing, and I'd be happy to open my books after the season, and as well as give you my data set if you're going to look into it ahead of time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pastner. All right, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, let's move on to item C, scheduled matter approval to introduce and waive first reading an ordinance to amend existing fees of the Department of Public Works Engineering Division. Mr. Machado.
Thank you and good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doring, Matt Machado, Public Works Director. Before you this morning is an ordinance to amend Public Works fees for services. The following PowerPoint will discuss the details of this proposed amendment. So, to begin with, the services that we provide, encroachment permits, construction inspection, cannot be paid by gas tax funds. We reviewed these fees back in 2009. The previous increase was in 1991. We saw that the fees needed to be adjusted. We recommended and this board approved a gradual fee increase to get back up to where they should be. This was done over 5 years. This is our fifth year, in fact, 2013. With this increase, we do expect the deficit to be eliminated. The proposed increase is based upon an average hourly rate of $95 in the actual cost, and which means the deficit will be eliminated is $95 per hour. Actual revenues and costs will vary depending on the number of permit applications and services performed. The engineering fees that we're proposing are based upon average time and cost. The base permit fee includes cost for administration, floodplain analysis, and GIS updates. We will look at a table here shortly, each individual fee that will have an increase. A flat rate of $190 is being proposed for routine inspections. This would be for 2 hours. And then an hourly rate for construction inspection, and this is typically for development on larger projects where we just time a material based upon the construction scope. Additionally, land survey fees are being looked at this year. There's three components that are being recommended for an increase: certificates of compliance, record of surveys, and road abandonment fee, and we'll cover those particulars on a table here shortly. So here, the blue line items are those being proposed for an increase, and we can see the excavation permits, which is the encroachment permits, and some other related items. The increase here is it's a $10 increase. The existing fee is $180 and the proposed is $190. So this will get us up to our $95 per hour rate. So that's the first three fees for excavation permits. Under construction permits for street improvements, the $190s, as you can see there, are $180 today, so it's a $10 increase. And then the hourly rate based upon the actual work, the $95 is an increase of $5. The current fee today is $90. So that's some of the increases. And then under land survey, we did have to change the analysis here a bit. When we looked at records of survey, we could see that our fee was just too low. And we looked at 3 years of revenue and expenses, and we were not collecting even close to the amount that we were spending, and so we wanted to correct that. We can see that with the footnote, the survey map processing, It's a base fee of $700 with a $100 per sheet if you go more than four sheets. So if it's a large survey, then you pay slightly more. And then for certificates of compliance, these are by parcel with a base fee of $695 plus $20 per parcel. And then the road abandonment is just is based upon the actual time we spend on these abandonments. These take quite a bit of time. We do have to contact all the utility companies and in many cases work with the landowners to work out some of the details of any existing easements. So that fee is being increased actually from $1,110 to the proposed fee of $1,620 there in front of you. Additionally, we do implement the grading permits for the county. It's through the building department under planning. And so the reflected increase here is just the hourly rate. The current rate is $90 and the proposed rate is $95. And you see that in the two blue line items. No change. This is just the rest of the building department's fee chart. And so the recommendation today is to conduct a public hearing to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to amend the existing fees for Department of Public Works Engineering Division. I would like to add that the implementation date of this fee structure would be 30 days after the approval of the ordinance, and it's written that way in the ordinance. I think it's 2 weeks out before we're back in front of you for the ordinance approval, and 30 days after that would be the effective date of this of these increased fees. With that, I can answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions of that? None? All right, then we'll open up the public hearing. Anyone would like to comment? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board. I guess I have one comment because it appears that this board, you know, has never seen a fee that they didn't love, and that's not the case. You know, fees are simply based on the nexus between what it costs the county. I mean, you have to prove, and if you're not, then we're not doing our job. Conversely, we may be using general fund monies in areas that we don't. And I think we talked about the park fees last year when we raised the fees. About 100% of the increase went to the sheriff's department because his operation was subsidizing security out at Woodward Reservoir during those holidays. So it always is to provide something, to provide the service. We can't charge. This is not to make money. This is just to provide that service. So, editorial comment for the day. Any other comments or entertain a motion?
Motion to approve.
I will second that.
We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Noes. Approved 5-0.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm allowed to make the motion in a second too, huh? Not like MID. Yeah, all right. So we're moving on to item D, approval and introduce and waive the first reading of the ordinance to amend the current building permit fees relating to the solar energy and other renewable alternative energy systems. Mr. Treat.
Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, members of the board, Vice Nino, and Mr. Dorn, Angela Freitas, Planning Director. With me this morning to present this item is Steve Treat, Chief Building Official, and Danny Faria, our Supervising Building Inspector. And hopefully we're going to put a refreshing twist to today's discussion because we're actually proposing some fee reductions. So I'm going to turn this over to Steve and Denny.
Good morning, Chairman Chiesa, Board Supervisors, Monica, Nino. Councilor Doran, we're here to do a presentation relating to solar energy and other renewable alternative energy systems. On June 8, 2010, Building Permits Division presented to the Board of Supervisors an ordinance to increase and amend building permit fees. Fees were adopted into ordinance by code section number 1083 on that date. The amendment included a new fee category for solar energy systems. The solar energy system fee was based on valuation, as most of our building permit fee calculations are based. Today's hearing is to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to amend the current building permit fees relating to solar energy and renewable alternative energy systems. In September 2012, the governor signed into law two bills that will regulate how local jurisdictions calculate permit fees. Due to this action, the Building Permits Division has created a new fee schedule that will align with the fees outlined in the new state laws. The intent of the state laws is to promote and encourage the use of solar energy systems through the regulation of fees to provide a consistent statewide standard to achieve timely and cost-effective installations of solar energy systems, to increase the deployment of solar energy distribution across all income spectrums, and to meet the goal of the state to have 33% of the state's electrical generations be supplied by renewable sources by the year 2020. The new state laws, Assembly Bill 1801, prohibits any city or county or charter city from calculating fees based on valuation of any type of solar energy system. Senate Bill 1222 required permit fees for solar energy systems not to exceed the estimated reasonable cost for services, and that it actually set a maximum amount per kilowatt on residential and commercial rooftop systems. The Senate Bill 1222 set a maximum fee for kilowatt on rooftop systems, but did not include ground mount systems. So the Building Division conducted a study to gather data for staff costs involved with ground mount solar systems. With the data collected, we were able to formulate a cost-based fee per kilowatt for ground mount solar systems that aligns with the state-regulated fees for the rooftop systems. This slide here shows an example of reduction in fees for these systems. A ground mount system of 113 kilowatts with a valuation of $171,864. The current fee for that system was $2,416. The proposed fee now will be $2,038. For a residential type ground mount at 16.8 kilowatts, that's what's normal for a residential home, the valuation is $34,000. The current fee was $973, and the proposed fee will be $895. Rooftop systems of 5.28 kilowatt, valuation $21,345. The current fee would be $654.25 for that today, and proposed will be $500. That would be our maximum on rooftop systems for residential. The building permit fees for alternative energy sources, we're going to propose a new fee in our miscellaneous permit fee schedule to include renewable alternative energy systems which pertain to wind and geothermal. Previously, we did not have that in our system categories. So we're going to put that in there today, propose to put it in there, so that we can track time on those systems. We do not get very many of those systems at all for geothermal or wind. But when we do, we'll be able to track the data and see where we can put a cost base for that. But right now, we do not have a cost base, so we're going to go strictly by the hour on that system. Staff recommendations are introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to amend the current building permit fees relating to solar energy and other renewable alternative energy systems. That's it.
Oh. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Any questions of staff? Again, none. We will open the public hearing. Anyone want to comment? Fees are going down.
Fees are going down.
All right. We'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the board.
That's a good thing.
Comments or motion?
I'll make a motion to approve all staff recommendations.
We have a motion, and I'm going to second it. I haven't got to say anything today. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Didn't have to hold our nose on that one. Thank you.
That was a good one. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to correspondence.
This board has received a notice regarding the adoption, recommendation, recirculation of the final environmental impact statement for the constructing and operating a high-speed passenger train between Merced and Fresno, California, from the Federal Railroad Administration and the California High-Speed Rail Authority.
Refer to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a letter from the State Department of Veterans Affairs regarding funding received through the California Stanislaus County Area Agency on Aging Veterans Services Department for veterans and their families in Stanislaus County from July 1st 2011 through June 30th, 2012.
Refer to the Area on Aging Veteran Services Department.
This board has received from the Gallo Center for the Arts, Inc., the second board of financial submission for the operating agreement with Stanislaus Hills County.
Refer to the Chief Executive Office.
This board has received a letter from the Sutter Health regarding the termination of approximately 39 employees that is expected to be permanent and to commence on or about June 17, 2013 from their Sutter Central Valley Hospitals doing business as Memorial Medical Center per their worker adjustment and retraining notification requirements.
Refer to the Alliance WorkNet and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? Seeing none, we'll move on to Legislative, Fiscal, and Management Report. CEO Nino.
Not today.
With nothing. So we have a closed session today.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session to have conference with the labor negotiator. The agency's negotiator is Monica Nino, Nancy Bronstein, and Jody Hayes. The labor organizations are those listed on the agenda. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. Additionally, we have two other matters to discuss that we did not complete last week. The first one is conference with legal counsel to discuss significant exposure to litigation involving multiple cases related to claims filed by the cities of Ceres, Newman, Turlock, Waterford concerning calculation of property tax administration fees. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D2. Additionally, there's conference with real property negotiator. The property involved is Crow's Landing Air Facility at Bell Road, Crow's Landing, California. The agency negotiators, Monica Nito and Keith Boggs. The lessee is Melvin T. Wheeler and Sons, and under negotiation is both price and terms of the farm lease. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. We do not expect to report out on any of these matters.
There's nothing else for the good of the order. This meeting is adjourned.